Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:26 in that specific summer time. And most of the action today was in the currency markets. The pound, for example, was weaker by 1.22 cents and down to 1.52, so it's pretty much unwound the advance that it had earlier this week and most of last week. And that's at least partly due to the fact that the BOE is seen as less likely to raise interest rates, and it would make no sense whatsoever for the Bank of England to raise rates when the Fed hasn't yet done it. There's no way they're going to go and do it on their own. Until we see additional clarity, then that's probably going to weigh on the pound a bit. But pretty good news for the stock market, and this was a pretty broad-based rally on the FTSE 100 today. Over 90 of the shares on the index were in positive territory, and the FTSE was up over 2%. When we look at, for example, it was up over 2% early in the day and paired the advance towards the end of the day. It was up 1.62% at the close, to be accurate. But when you look at the FTSE, the DAX, the Hong Kong H share index, they share a common characteristic, and that is that they experienced a reasonable bounce, but not a particularly impressive bounce from their August 24th lows, and have now come back to test those lows and have at least bounced. The DAX was up by about 0.44% today, and the auto sector continues to weigh there. For example, Volkswagen was off its low today, well off its low, having gone right down to test the 100 euro level. But there is no way that one could say that this debacle in terms of governance is over for Volkswagen, but it may present a buying opportunity for some of its competitors. But we won't have it's still a gambling attitude, unless one has intimate knowledge of the mechanics of engine design, because who's to know whether companies like Fiat or Daimler or BMW, Cummins, have superior technology. And that's an unknowable, considering that Volkswagen is such a large company and have been up to some pretty nefarious activities. But what we're seeing is that this bounce from the region of the August lows will absolutely need to hold if support building is to be given the benefit of the doubt. In Asia this morning, the Hang Seng was down about 2.25%. And the H share index closed off its low, having come back to test its late August low. The mainland market was reasonably unchanged, down a bit. But in the context of such incredible volatility, even though I think it was down about 2%, it looks rather inert relative to what we've seen previously. The Brazilian market was down 2%, and Wall Street was relatively unchanged. When you start to look at some of the currencies, though, this is where you're starting to see not only accelerating trends, but a general tone of weakness right across the currency markets. The Canadian loonie went to a new closing low today against the US dollar. The Australian dollar was down almost a full cent. It's back below 70 cents to the dollar, and this is still a consistent downtrend for the Aussie dollar, and it's exactly the same for the New Zealand dollar. The South African rand has been trending consistently lower against the US dollar for about 3.5 years. The Indonesian rupiah is now accelerating lower against the US dollar. When one looks at Indonesian government bonds, I've posted the chart in here today, then local currency bonds yield about 9% against a domestic CPI of about 7.5%. But US dollar bonds issued by the Indonesian government, which is a double B rating, yield about 4.1%. And that's the generic. If you look at the on-the-run bond, then it's 3.95%. And against treasuries, which are about 2.14%, I mean, that's not good value. That really does suggest that we're going to see yields moving higher from here. This deterioration in the currency is going to be great news when it stops. It's going to put the Indonesian economy back on a competitive footing. And you could say exactly the same thing for a number of the other emerging market and commodity-based currencies that are deteriorating and have been deteriorating for quite some time at this stage. That once you get some clarity that the deterioration in the currency has ended, well, then that's when you crystallize the competitive advantage that's been gained. And that's really when exports take off. That's generally also when foreign investors start to become interested once more. But if one looks, for example, at the Jakarta Composite Index, then it's already deteriorated a lot. And that's in nominal terms against the background of a currency which has just been in free fall. But in US dollar terms, it went to a new low today. And that's where the rubber meets the road. It's the large foreign investors that are pulling their money out of emerging markets because of the currency risk. They were treated to just an incredibly benign environment for much of the last 10 years, where you could get currency market, capital market, and yield appreciation from by investing in emerging markets. And that is most certainly not the case any longer. That you're getting currency risk, you're getting capital market risk, and then the yield isn't really compensating you when you have those other two risks. So emerging markets represent the epicenter of risk at the present time. Then, but it's hardly a time to be panicky. This is not a rehash of what we had in 2008 or even 2000. This looks to be much more like a medium-term correction. We've long defined the bull market on Wall Street as liquidity-fueled, and it's the liquidity-fueled loss of it's the liquidity-fueled rally that contributed to the just incredible consistency that we had between 2012 and the end of 2014. And the removal of the Fed's quantitative easing program has contributed to the loss of momentum and more recently to this increased state of volatility. When you have incredibly low interest rates, it pushes everybody out to take additional risks. And when the cost of borrowing money is nothing, then you can borrow more of it. Then you can also take on additional leverage. The absolute quantity of debt that has been issued over the last few years is at new all-time highs. Covenant loans are at new all-time highs. So there's certainly plenty of risk out there. And a lot of it is focused in the fixed income markets. Certainly, the Fortune 500 are not overly leveraged. Much of the bond issuance has gone in the higher grade has been to refinance old debt, to fund share buybacks, to deleverage balance sheets, or to, in the case of companies like Apple, to migrate some of their enormous overseas cash pile and to so that they can fund buybacks domestically. And that kind of financial engineering isn't really what's going to cause any kind of problem. But where you have high yield and where you have your foreign companies that have been issuing debt in US dollars, and that really is where there's going to be an issue. And that's probably, you're considering where the spreads are for high yield government debt, for high yield bonds, then there is ample room for margin for spread expansion there. In the commodity complex, the industrial metals were mixed in here today, but copper was relatively unchanged, having been down really quite heavily yesterday, and zinc has bounced in here today from the region of a five-year low. But oil prices were down by 166 on West Texas and 1.25 on Brent. And that caps the short-term advance, that it's looking just incredibly difficult for oil prices to rally from these levels. because there is so much additional supply becomes economic at higher levels. And it's looking increasingly likely that the fate of natural gas is probably what we can expect from crude oil. That the lows are probably not that far away, but the ability of oil to sustain a rally is going to be inhibited by the fact that progressively more supply becomes economic the higher prices go, and the ability of that supply to be brought to market is really quite easy considering the number of wells that have already been drilled. So energy prices are unlikely to rally very much, but neither are they likely to fall very much, at least in my opinion, because $40 is where a great deal of supply becomes uneconomic. So then we're into a situation that is probably quite close to what we had with natural gas, and that we could see lengthy ranging. In the precious metals, gold was stronger by about $5, having been as low as 11.21. It finished out the day around 11.30. And silver was reasonably steady, and it's back up to 14.75, having pulled back really quite sharply over the last couple of days. But palladium was the real star performer. It was up $37.55. And that's a substantial break above the $600 area. And it's at least part of that is on the back of a commitment on the behalf of the Chinese announced while Xi is here in the US to improve emission standards in a number of different cities, and catalytic converters use quite a bit of palladium. That suggests that we're going to continue to see a reversion towards the mean following what had been a very steep decline for palladium prices, and that might also have contributed to the relative weakness of platinum yesterday, which was down an additional $3 today and is down to $933. In the government bond markets, we've also been treated to really quite a lot of volatility, and even the euro has been really quite volatile. It's been just up one day and down another, but it continues to encounter resistance around the region of 114 to 115, and that represents the region of the 200-day moving average. The Fed might not be particularly thrilled with having a strong dollar, but the USA needs a weak dollar less than other countries, and that's likely to remain the case for at least the short to medium term. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.